Hey, welcome everybody. This is the State of the CIO, where we talk with America's top IT leaders about the changing role of technology in the C-suite. I'm your host, Dan Kelly. Hey everybody, Dan Kelly here with State of the CIO podcast. We've got another awesome guest for you today. His name is Scott Howitt. He's the SVP and CIO at McAfee Organization. Hey, Scott.
Hey, how are you doing today?
Excellent. Thank you. You know, I'm looking forward to this conversation for two reasons. One, you obviously have an impressive background and bring a lot of expertise and experience to the table that our audience will clearly absorb. But two, you work for an organization that is at the front and center of the current needs in the environment of having everyone work from home, a lot of new endpoints regarding security and our overwhelming demand for cybersecurity within the workplace right now. You know, we were talking about how sometimes the security is just to protect against annoying threats. Other times there can be catastrophic threats at an organizational level. So would love to have you now just maybe give a quick introduction of yourself and maybe explain how you got into the IT world just to begin with.
Yeah, sure. So, you know, a quickie background. I graduated from UT at the end of the Cold War, and I was actually a physics major. So fortunately or unfortunately, the Cold War ended. And so the physics jobs kind of went away. And so I got into the technology field and found that I really loved it. So I started as a developer. Then I got super fortunate and I became CTO of .com pretty early on and then took a bunch of other executive roles. So I've been a CIO and I've been a CISO at some pretty large organizations. And so, you know, McAfee was a kind of a natural progression when I came here because I've been the CISO of a couple of Fortune 500 companies, but I've also been a CIO before. So I kind of understand the healthy tension between the two roles. So it's been a really good match for me.
I'm curious, which role have you enjoyed more just in general? It's actually three roles, perhaps, right? You've been a CIO, CISO, and CTO.
Yeah, I think as I look at it, you know, CTO is a little bit more fun because there's not as big a staff and you get to be a little bit more of the dreamer. But, you know, I think that's one of the things that sometimes technologists miss on, right, is you're there to serve the business and not just be there as a part of technology. So I have had a lot of fun coming up with ways that how do you marry what the business is trying to get to with a technology that you think would be great to deploy to help them out. And so now, you know, especially where we are today with technology, where it's advancing so rapidly, you know, things that were art of the possible, probably only a couple of years ago you couldn't do, now you can. And so it's pretty fun to start marrying those things together.
Yeah, I'm curious, before we get into kind of the meat of our discussion, you mentioned in your intro this kind of healthy tension between the CISO and the CIO. Could you explain a little bit more about that? Our primary listenership are primarily CIOs. And the reason I'm asking you is because I think it would be really healthy for CIOs to hear it right from your mouth, having served in both roles.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because my first CIO role, I remember we were looking to go public and in comes one of the big four and they start talking about, hey, what are all the things that you're doing for security? I'm like, whatever, could you like get out of the office and let's talk about all the cool things I'm doing? Because like security doesn't matter that much, right? And then, you know, I think you have your first security incident and it's like, oh, wow, it doesn't matter until it matters, right? And then when I was a CISO, I was very fortunate that the first company that I stepped into as a CISO had just experienced a large breach and I was the guy that they brought in to kind of clean it up. And so they really paid attention to it. But in the next role that I took, I was brought on as a peer, so I didn't work for the CIO. And boy, I'm telling you, the first 2 years we spent kind of butting heads with each other where there were certain things that I thought needed to be cleaned up. And there were certain things that he was like, I don't care. I got these business priorities that I got to satisfy. Towards the latter end of that engagement, the CIO left. And so I was a CIO and CISO both. And I found myself being a little schizophrenic in my conversations. I need to hurry up and get some stuff delivered, but oh my gosh, I got to get the security in. And it really did kind of change my view on it is there are two sides of the same role, especially as fast as technology is moving today. The CISO has got to get themselves out of the mindset of, hey, I'm a compliance function. No, you're a business enabling function. Seatbelts and anti-lock brakes are not a checkbox compliance function in a car. They're what make cars being able to go faster because you have those safety features in place, right? And the CIO has got to get out of the mindset of, yeah, I'll engage security when I'm near implementation. It's like security is baked into good engineering, because that way it's something that you're not thinking about as you're developing it and modifying it later on. So they both need to have better open dialogues with each other. And now that there's such a transformation in technology, now's the time to have that conversation.
Yeah, that's a good parlay into our opening statement. As we were talking before we hit the record button here, is how security in general has changed from, quite frankly, just being an expense line item that CEO and sometimes even the CIO, I think, arguably just kind of view as a black box versus business enabler. Could you talk a little bit about the business enablement? I know we have a lot of CISOs that listen to this podcast as well. And I think speaking on behalf of them, it'd be interesting to see how you frame up that statement to bring maybe a little bit more, not credibility, but focus on the security piece as an enablement tool versus an expense.
Yeah, I think the first thing that I would say is know your business. In fact, it was funny, I was on the phone with a CISO earlier today, and it's like, well, are you sure the things you're addressing are the things that they care about? So I was at a large gaming organization. And, you know, I had gone there around 2014, and it was when all the retail breaches were happening. And so they hadn't really hit the casino world yet. And so I sat down, and that was the very first thing I did, is we look at where revenue flows across the organization. That's what most people don't know about Las Vegas. Gaming is only about 30% of revenue. About 70% comes from the concerts and the restaurants and the shows and all the other things that go into it. And it's like, hey, cash registers need to be flowing for registers to be flowing. So like the first thing I would address is, let's lock down all the cash registers. Seems super intuitive, but they hadn't done it yet, right? And let's lock down all the cash registers so that the only thing that runs on the cash register is actually point of sale system. And so this will protect us from ransomware. This will protect us from exploits. This will protect us from all of that. And it was the very first thing we addressed. And being able to speak in terms of, hey, if revenue stopped flowing because ransomware locked up all of our cash registers, and it would probably take us about 12 hours to recover if we replaced them all from scratch, like how much revenue would that impact? And so once they started seeing those things, then we were able to talk about, hey, what happens if the ticket in, ticket out machines went down? Maybe that's our next area of threat that we need to talk about. And, you know, on a busy Friday night, if those ticket in, ticket out machines go offline, you're talking hundreds of thousands of dollars of revenue per hour that just goes away. And so, you know, as you're looking at security within the organization, part of your job is to protect it. But really, security guys are really good about remembering the confidentiality and integrity part of the CIA triad, but they forget the availability part, which is probably the most important. And so your job is actually to help keep revenue flowing and stop it and making sure that they can meet their business objectives as much as it is protecting the data and all those things.
Right. I was thinking of the term license to operate almost, right?
Exactly. Hey, if the cash isn't flowing, we all suffer.
I had no idea the percentages were like that in Vegas, by the way. I've been out there probably a million times and I've never thought about that. Only 30% of revenue is from...
Yeah, that's why you don't see the free buffets as much anymore. They figured out how to monetize everything else. And, you know, hey, where else can you go within 100 yards of each other? You're hitting 6 Michelin star restaurants, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. You know, I have a question based on your diverse experience, you know, from retail to gaming to elsewhere. Are you seeing similar threats in each specific industry just with their own flavor? Or do you find industry specific threats? Does that question make sense?
Yeah, it totally makes sense. I think what you see is, you know, it's funny because I was talking to somebody in healthcare today and they're like, oh my gosh, yeah, and ransomware attacks are really up in the healthcare space, but they're kind of down throughout the world, right? It's just that now the threat actors seem to target industries. So you'll see it, like I said, you saw it in 2014 in the retail industry, point of sale theft, you know, it kept on happening over and over again. And that threat vector had existed for, you know, 10 years before it actually materialized. But then all of the threat actors woke up and said, wow, retailers just aren't protecting that. And they went after it in earnest. And so I think it's important if you're a security guy to do two things. Number one, participate in the ISACs or the ISALs of your industry and do all that knowledge sharing of what's going on right now within your industry so that you can be prepared for what's going on. But I would also say, you know, I do a lot of knowledge sharing cross industry because the problem that you're having today is probably, you know, maybe you're having that today and some other guy in some other industry isn't, but it'll probably come around to your area at some point. You know, in cloud security is a great one. I remember I was talking to the CISO of Cadbury Schweppes and he's like, oh yeah, we're going all G Suite. We're moving everything out to AWS and all that. And I'm like, that's the dumbest thing I ever heard. Like, I would never move anything out of my data center. Like, you're crazy. And then, you know, like 3 years later, I'm giving calls like, hey, JJ, tell me again how you're securing all this cloud stuff, right? And so, you know, like I said, different industries have different pressures at different times, which means you get different threat actors doing different things at different times.
Right. Yeah. Because quite frankly, because the maturity of one industry versus another will change, right?
Yep. Totally.
Yeah. That makes sense. What do you see as the biggest threat across the industry based on our current environment? Battling a global pandemic with everyone working from home.
I think what happened with COVID-19 is a lot of 3-year plans got turned into 3-week plans. So we were fairly fortunate at my organization because we already had a lot of people working in a lot of different locations with a lot of people working from their house. And so we responded to it pretty quickly, you know, maybe tweaked some VPNs and things like that. And we were good to go. You know, I also talk to a lot of our customers, and we have customers that today are still struggling with it. If you think about back to how I thought when I was at the big retailer, right? It's like I had my own data centers. I had my own walled garden. I knew how to protect it. I knew how to do all that. But the assumption was people were coming into the office or the store every day. Well, guess what? People aren't now. And lots of people are working from home. And oh, by the way, even supply chains like customer service reps that were VPNing into your system, now they can't even VPN into their system to VPN to your system because they're overwhelmed. And so we had to come up with new ways of work that in a lot of cases, like VPN, we hope to be done with VPN in a year or two. Hey, a direct connect out, have cloud edge security, that's where you need to be. And you know what I'm already telling my folks is, hey, let's just say the miracle serum came out tomorrow. I doubt we're all going back into the office immediately, if ever. And I think, you know, it was a CEO of Honeywell who came out and said, as an executive, I can tell you, I will forever cut my travel in half by 50% because now I realize there's so much that I can do remotely. There's always times when you need face-to-face interactions, right? But even I'm thinking about like, do I have my workforce come into the office every day or do I offer them a couple days in, couple days out? Do I offer them come in when you want to type thing? I don't know. But I think if you're not thinking about like right now, you know, and some people are still trying to fix the right now problem of how am I securing everybody working from home? Well, you better think about, and what am I going to do for the next 2 years or forever after that? Because this does change everything. I'm sure everybody's worn out on the new reality phrase, but it is a brand new reality where I'm questioning everything that we've done in the past.
Right. Let's talk about that just for a second. We talk about this topic a lot as far as business productivity in kind of a remote working setting. Are you seeing productivity generally go up, go down, stay consistent? Your team is probably listening, so they're going to like, what is he going to say? But
I would say right off the bat, my team is awesome.
And yeah. I'm just curious, though, just kind of holistically, what are you seeing?
I'm seeing that we're working so hard that we're actually having to encourage people to slow down. You know, in fact, we took the week of July 4th as a company, besides critical functions, we just told everybody to lay off for a week. So I think productivity is way up. I think, you know, having to help people find ways to disconnect and all that is certainly something that we're working on. I think too, the collaboration, the face-to-face and voice technology and video technology is a lot better. There's probably still some room for improvement in the whiteboarding technology and all that. So how do we go and improve that experience? And two, you know, I do miss spending time with my customers and my business partners. Again, I think conventions are great, and it wasn't so much for the speakers. It was the drink at the bar afterward where you talk about what the speaker said with your peers. And those are some of the interactions that I think people really miss. And I need to figure out how to keep my people happy by substituting those experiences with something else.
Hence how this podcast was born. That's exactly right. It's those conversations from people like you that said, wouldn't it be nice? So that's good to hear. A conversation with peers is always needed. And you're right. This water cooler talk is the only major gap, I think, that even we're seeing across all of our clients as well. So we actually start seeing people doing Teams meetings, Zoom meetings, et cetera, for happy hours on a regular basis, or even just for lunch, you know, just to try to kind of fill that void.
Yeah, for sure. We're doing some of those things and some like online trivia contests and stuff like that. But I do think there is a, you know, how do you get a little bit deeper interaction at times? And it is hard. Like I've got two crazy big screens here. There are some times where like the team meeting is going a little bit slow. And so I'll click off to this side. And it's like, you know, that's super hard to do in a meeting, right?
Yeah.
So I think we do need to find a way to be super engaging with people. But I think it is a reality that people are coming around to and we're figuring out how to work around it.
So I have a bit of a provocative question that I'd love your thought leadership on. You know, the CSO, the CISO, you know, I always view as a constantly nervous function. I think you understand what I mean. You know, if something goes wrong, you know, whose head's going to roll for right or for wrong? And, you know, the CIO is focused on information management as well as, quite frankly, enabling the business from a revenue perspective. How do you balance within our new environment the ultimate desire of wanting to have completely secure endpoints? So you've got everybody working at home from their personal network, et cetera. In a perfect world, everyone would be working in a SCIF. That's obviously not happening. That's not reality. How do you balance that desire from, let's call it a CISO, to managing the appropriate level of freedom for the employee who's working from home? Does that question make sense?
Totally makes sense. So I'll offer an equally controversial response to it is for CISOs that want to control the devices, get over it. You need to come up with a new paradigm to operate under. And the reason I say that is my team, I used to have this conversation with them a lot. Well, they just need to get over it. Like this is one little hump that they need to do. And I can't remember the year that RSA did it, but they did something called the confession survey. And 78% of employees at RSA said, yeah, security is too arduous. I'm just going to figure out a way to get around it. And it's like, okay, so again, back to, you know, you got to almost hide security from people and just have it running for them. And I think that's what you call effective security. So to really date myself, right, I started in computers in 88. There was a 50-pound green screen that we would fight over, like, ooh, I think that green screen has clearer letters than this other one. And so at some point, you know, after 2000, what was really cool about being a technologist is you always had the coolest technology because your company would buy it for you. And now what's happening is when people come into the workplace and they're being handed technology, it's like the technology I got at home is a heck of a lot better than that crap you're handing to me in the office. So they're going to find what technology works best for them to work off of, and they're going to work off of it. And oh, by the way, that Alexa device that I hear people getting all paranoid about or whatever, you know, I use this paradigm all the time. It used to be when I wanted to check the weather, I picked up the phone and I dialed a number.
Right.
And then, wow, the computers came along and I could walk into the other room and go to weather.com and see where the weather was. And then I got smartphones and I didn't even have to leave the couch and I could look it up. And now I don't even bother pulling the phone out of my pocket. I lean over the thing and say, Alexa, what's the weather going to be like? Right.
Right.
Well, which one is most convenient? Obviously. And so, why wouldn't you think that that is not going to be the technology that people are going to want to use? And the technologists that are being successful are the ones that aren't saying, no, 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 this is why you got to be saddled with this technology. What they're doing is saying, hey, yeah, I get it. Technology has got to be as agile as the rest of the business, and we're going to figure out how to do that with you. And so I think the idea is we're an antivirus company. Trust me, it has a lot of great purposes, but we're also leaning incredibly fast and incredibly heavily into the cloud because we realize, hey, the cloud edge is where all of security is moving to, and we think we're great at doing that. And that's where it's all going to. And if I were a guy coming into the security world right now, I'd be learning a whole lot about VPCs and stuff like that. And packet capture and all those old network things that we used to worry about, unless you think you're going to work in the data center for the rest of your life, don't worry about it, because APIs and containers and all that is where you need to learn your security.
Yeah, the antivirus software is the table stakes, you know, everyone should have, but what's the newest focus? And that's that cloud computing security endpoint, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I want to shift to a couple of the key questions that I ask every guest on the show. One, you actually started addressing it a little earlier in our discussion, but if you could speak to yourself 20 years ago, 30 years ago, whatever the appropriate number is, Scott, I don't want to make judgments. 15 years ago, I don't know. You could give yourself some advice. You know, we've already talked about the cloud computing space a bit. What would that advice be? In other words, what's the guiding star that's helped you succeed in your career?
You know, quite honestly, I don't think it's going to be what you think it is. So I was a Bachelor of Science in Physics, and I quickly realized as I was screaming into my junior year that I just wasn't that smart. I was an optics specialist. I remember sitting next to this dude, and I felt pretty good because I'd gotten 40s and 50s on all my tests, and they always curved up to an A. And I looked at the dude next to me, and he had a 95. And he's like, yeah, you know, I've been getting those about every test. And it's like, yeah, you're going to get your doctorate. I am not. I switched from Bachelor of Science to Bachelor of Art. And at UT, that meant take a lot more business classes, take a few humanities classes and all that. I think, quite honestly, universities can't teach you current technology anyway. They can never keep up with where the industry is today. So go take a Renaissance education. And it served me well from the standpoint of I can take a complex technical problem and usually go have a conversation with a non-technical person and get them to understand, at least in theory, where the problems are. And I can also read a balance sheet. I understand their business drivers. And boy, that's been super helpful bridging the gap as an executive. Because if you want to be seen as a contributor to the game, you've got to not only be able to talk technology, but you've got to be able to understand the business. And I say that to people over and over again. If you don't understand the business, you can't be a good CISO, because how do you know you're protecting the right thing?
Right. No, that honestly makes perfect sense. It parlays into a conversation we have quite a bit with your peers on the focus on business partnering and enabling the business, like we talked about, versus simply telling the business what they need. You know, it's the classic IT knows more than business knows.
Well, and you know, it's funny because I was helping a guy out. I went through his board presentation, and he's, you know, oh, we had 1 billion events and we did 150,000 blocks, you know, and he went through it. And I'm like, you know, like the CFO hands them a balance sheet and everybody knows how to read it. The CISO hands them this mess of dials and numbers. And so like, I always just try to do basic matrices of like, these are where our threats are and this is what we need to pay attention to, or very simple graphs of here's where we started and here's where we ended. You can see the progress. Don't get caught up in the numbers or all that. It doesn't matter if you had 1,000 cleans or 1 clean. As long as it was a right clean, that's all that matters.
Right. All right. Next question. New for season 2 of the podcast. Tell me your favorite worst boss story.
So when I was a first-time executive at a real company, and I probably could have used some good mentorship, and I remember the CEO, I had stepped him through multiple, here's how we're going to change technology, and here's what we're going to do, and here's how we're going to change the personnel, and all those things. And he just looked at me one day, and he's like, you know, I know you probably know all this technology stuff, but you're just kind of dumb when it comes to dealing with personnel, right? And so, you know, like, I've always thought I was pretty good. You know, I always got high grades at my other locations. And so it was funny because at the end of the meeting, what it ended up doing is I said, hey, can I see you after the meeting? And we went to his office, and the conversation ended up in, I hate you, you hate me. Like, can we just wrap a package and be done with this relationship, right? But it was funny because I guess what good came out of it is, as with all things, people should always look in the mirror after the argument and say, wow, what culpability did you bring into that problem relationship? And so it did help me as like, wow, I guess as an executive, there's a different level of expectation that you had as opposed to just being a people leader, right? And so it was actually super helpful. But it is funny because when you ask that question, it's like, man, I had so many good leaders. They all kind of blend together. Like I can still almost play the conversation that he and I had verbatim 20 years later. So your victories are easily forgotten, man. Your defeats stick with you for a long time.
That's human nature. Yeah. It builds character, I think, is the appropriate explanation. Yeah. Well, it sounds like there's a silver lining and maybe a poor tactful conversation from whoever that individual was.
Yeah, it certainly helped me down the road. So I bear no ill will if he figures out who I'm talking about.
That's cool. Well, any final thoughts for our audience from your perspective, Scott, as you're looking what's happening in the world right now, what's happening in your industry, being one of the top experts in the field, you know, any quick housekeeping tips perhaps for the audience to think about?
Yeah, what I would say is, you know, I tell my team this all the time. I try to read 50 to 100 books a year. And some of them I read for pure distraction, right? And some I read to, like, you always have to be educating yourself. And so I think especially now, as quickly as technology is changing and all that, and you can't expect to have the SMEs in your organization that you always had, because, you know, let's face it, something like Kubernetes wasn't even a thing 6 or 7 years ago. It's recently introduced and now everybody's using it, right?
Yeah.
And so as Americans, we need to learn to get a heck of a lot scrappier than we are today. And we need to be voracious learners and not just sit there and kind of rest on our past victories. And so I would highly encourage, there's a great book called AI Superpowers, and the author is Keifu Lee. And he's Taiwanese, and he spent a lot of time working in Silicon Valley and then a lot of time working in China as well. And he compares and contrasts the two cultures. It's fascinating. We think we're pretty amazing in some of the juggernauts that we've created in the US in that. But China's starting to catch up and in some cases surpass us. We worked a lot with Tencent and WeChat Pay and all that in our Asian casinos. And, you know, it's like a Swiss Army knife on your phone for payments and all sorts of stuff that, you know, the U.S. is lagging behind a little bit because in some cases we're saddled with legacy technology and we can't just skip right over it. And so in American companies, I see some hesitation to make those big investments and big bets. And there's a reason the Fortune 500 list from today looks very different than it did from 10 years ago, because there's just so much disruption and displacement. And COVID is really going to make it change, right? And so a lot of companies will never recover from this, and some will become even more powerful because of this.
Yeah, well said. Scott, if people wanted to get a hold of you just to ask a question, maybe some advice, or even purchase something from McAfee, maybe, regarding this topic, how would they most successfully get a hold of you?
You know, I'm on LinkedIn, and I'm on Twitter at the very imaginative handle at Scott Howitt. So super easy to find. And so, yeah, I've been super fortunate that all the years I've had a lot of great people that I've been able to reach out to. And so I'm always willing to pay it forward and always willing to have a drink with a new friend.
That's great to hear. Yeah, we'll schedule one for the two of us.
Sounds like fun.
Cool. Hey, everyone, if you enjoyed today's episode, feel free to subscribe and also give me feedback at dan@thenegotiator.guru, as many of you have. So thank you very much for that feedback, because we're doing this for you. So thank you so much, Scott, for your time.
Thank you for having me.
Hey, everyone, thanks for listening. If you got value from today's conversation, please share this podcast with one person you think who would enjoy it. For show notes, episodes, and more, please visit thenegotiator.guru. Look forward to hearing from everyone soon. Thanks, and we'll talk to you soon.